Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, we're going to start off by giving you an update on what's going on with regards to the actual conflict. Now, the reason that I want to do that is because there's a very close correlation between the length of this war and what happens in the global economy. The longer that this drags on for, the worse things are going to get financially. We're already on the brink of a major global recession. But if this conflict does carry on through the rest of 2022 and into 2023, then it's going to get worse. The situation is going to deteriorate. And the reason I'm saying this is that a number of YouTube creators who are posting videos about Ukraine and what's going on have had their channels demonetized. So that means that they are no longer eligible to earn any money directly from YouTube. Now, I personally don't follow most of these creators. And from what I understand, a lot of them are actually talking about the conflict itself and what's happening in terms of the fighting. But I know for a lot of these creators that YouTube is their primary source of income. So receiving a demonetization notice is going to be a really big blow financially. Now, from my perspective, as I think most of you will be fully aware, I'm focused on the economics, the finance, and trying to look at what the day-to-day impact of what's happening in Ukraine will be on everybody's lives. So I'm hoping that the YouTube authorities will not consider the content that's going out on this channel as representing any sort of a problem. The second major topic that I want to cover off today is the Sakhalin 1 oil and gas development project. And Sakhalin is an island that's located off the coast of Russia, but it's very close to Japan and is really important for the supply of oil and gas directly into Japan. President Putin recently signed a decree which takes full control of this facility, and that's going to have a major impact on all of the joint venture partners, which include ExxonMobil from the US, Japanese partners and Indian partners. So we'll go through the full details of what that decree states, what's happening with regards to production going forward, and what the risks are from Russia's perspective right now. And the third major topic I want to cover off in today's video relates to the supply of oil. If you've been following the channel, you'll know that OPEC Plus recently announced that it was cutting production targets in order to keep oil prices high. And the USA have now come out and responded directly to that. So we'll go through the details of what the USA have announced, what they're doing, and what the risks are going forward for oil prices and the economy. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think the implications of all of the issues we're discussing in today's video are for the global economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. I'm still on that push for 200,000, so it'd be fantastic if you could help out. Don't forget, I always include chapters, so if you don't have time to watch the whole video, you can pick and choose what you'd like to watch. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, and Amazon shopping links. Unfortunately, things are starting to really heat up with regards to the conflict and the fighting in Ukraine. Over the course of the last few weeks, we have seen Ukrainian forces taking back significant amounts of land in the east of the country. It's been reported that they've recovered over 6,000 square kilometres, so almost 4,000 square miles. And they've taken a number of key towns, including Lyman, which was being used as a logistics hub by Russia. And in addition to the gains in the east, Ukraine has now reported that it's taken back around 1,200 square kilometres, around 450 miles of land in the south of the occupied areas around Kherson. Now, in addition to these land gains, the other major recent development has been the explosion that took place on the Crimea Bridge, which is the 12-mile-long bridge which links the Russian mainland to the annexed area of Crimea. Now, this bridge is a $3.7 billion construction that took over 2 years and was a landmark project from President Putin's perspective. And it was reported that he was absolutely furious about this explosion, which damaged part of the land bridge and set fire to some of the railway bridge. Now, in what seems to be a direct response to recent Ukrainian gains, and particularly the explosion on the Crimea Bridge, it's been reported that missile strikes have occurred in a variety of cities all across Ukraine, including the capital of Kyiv, which hasn't seen any military incidents for a number of months. Ukrainian sources report that Russian cruise missiles were deployed during rush hour to maximize the amount of damage in cities, including Kyiv and Lviv, which is located in the west of the country and a long way from all of the occupied areas. So what are the implications of these missile strikes? Well, over the last few weeks, all of the reports have been about Ukrainian gains. Russia has been on the back foot, and as a result of that, President Putin called his mobilization. And it's reported that over 200,000 new troops have been mobilized as part of this effort. And what we're seeing now is Russia coming back onto the offensive. So it's clear that Russia are not going to retreat any further. They are looking to consolidate their position. And it's quite likely that over the course of the next few weeks and months, that Russia will be pushing back and trying to regain some of the areas that it's lost. So unfortunately, in terms of the long-term implications, it looks like this war is set to go on for at least the rest of this year and could easily go on well into 2023. And from an economic perspective, that's the worst case scenario, because the longer that this war goes on, the worse it's going to be for the global economy. As I'm sure you're perfectly aware, the direct impact of this war has been to cause a lot of volatility in terms of oil prices, food prices, commodity prices. And it's causing a lot of problems with regards to the global supply chain. So during the first few months of this conflict, we saw prices spiking. They've remained relatively high, albeit we've seen a softening in some prices over the last few months, which has been driven predominantly by the expectation that we're going into a global slowdown and potential recession. But if this war carries on, then the volatility will continue and the world economy will not be able to move on and start rebuilding until some form of peace settlement is agreed between Russia and Ukraine. Now, as it stands right now, that peace settlement looks a long way off. Russia has annexed the four areas that it's occupying and deems that land to be part of Russia. Ukraine and the West have said that that was an illegal move and that they don't accept any of that annexation. And so we've got a complete difference of opinion and the fighting is now starting to intensify. And as we go into the winter period, it's likely that Ukraine and the West will put more pressure on the Russian troops because they're trying to push them back at a time when it's going to be difficult for Russia to keep those supplies coming to all of the troops. And the bombing of the Crimea Bridge was a symbolic moment in this war because it shows that Ukraine is not sitting back. It's trying now to go on the offensive and really cut off all of those supply lines. But if Russia can get through the difficult and critical winter period, then it's likely that the war will carry on well into 2023, and that will be more bad news for the global economy. President Putin has now signed a decree which gives full legal ownership and operational rights to a newly formed Russian company over the Sakhalin 1 oil and gas development project. This project was established around 15 years ago on the island of Sakhalin, which sits off the shore of Russia close to Japan, and was a joint venture established between the US company ExxonMobil, the Japanese authorities, India and Russia. The island of Sakhalin is part of Russia and sits on large oil and gas reserves. However, those oil and gas reserves were difficult to tap into and develop. Firstly, because the area is located very far north and therefore has extreme temperatures, it's very cold. And secondly, because of the tectonic plates and the potential risk of earthquakes. In order to develop the facilities, Russia needed external expertise and know-how, and also large amounts of capital investment. It's reported that the original consortium invested around $12 billion into the development of the facilities. An ownership of the production rights and revenues for the project was split 30% for ExxonMobil, 30% for the Japanese-owned Sakhalin Oil and Gas Development Company, 20% for the Indian company ONGC Videsh Limited, and the remaining 20% was owned by Russian entities. Now, following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, ExxonMobil came out and stipulated that it no longer wanted to invest any further into Russia and that it wanted to exit from all of its existing investments. And since that time, it's been looking to sell its stake in the Sakhalin 1 development. In August, President Putin signed a decree notifying the other partners in the project that Russia intended to establish a new company. And at that time, ExxonMobil issued a statement saying that it looked difficult to be able to exit from the project safely. The latest decree has established a new Russian company, which is now the sole operator of the Sakhalin 1 project. And the Russian authorities have advised the previous shareholders that they now have 1 month to notify Russia if they would like to be involved in the project going forward. Now, this is an interesting development and is exactly the same as what Russia did with another project on the same island called Sakhalin 2, which is predominantly focused on the production of gas. Now, that project is also a long-standing joint venture which was developed with the UK company Shell, who also came out with the same statement as ExxonMobil after the start of the invasion, that they no longer wanted to be involved in Russia and they wanted to exit from all of their investments. After Russia transferred the Sakhalin 2 development to a NewCo, Shell walked away from its investment, writing off around $5 billion. But interestingly, the two Japanese investment companies that were involved in the deal, Mitsubishi and Mitsui, both decided that they wanted to retain their stakes and so applied to the Russian authorities for a 10% stake each in the NewCo company. Now, no formal statement has been released by ExxonMobil with regards to what's happened for Sakhalin 1. However, they've already taken a $4.6 billion impairment charge with regards to their investment in the project. And it looks likely that ExxonMobil will walk away from this arrangement. However, the Japanese authorities have come out recently and stated that the procurement of oil from Sakhalin 1 is important to Japan's economy. So it looks likely that they will apply to retain their 30% investment in the deal into the NewCo. Now, one thing I think is really interesting about what's been happening at Sakhalin 1 is that prior to the invasion of Ukraine, the site was producing around 220,000 barrels of oil per day. And if you think about oil being worth roughly around $100 per barrel, to keep it simple, that means it's producing around $22 million worth of oil per day. So from ExxonMobil's perspective, this investment was yielding around $6.5 million of revenue per day, which equates to around 1% of their global gross revenues. So not a material amount of income from the group perspective. But what is really interesting to note here is that the figures that we've seen for July, which are the most recent available, show that in that month, the Sakhalin 1 project was only producing 10,000 barrels of oil per day, compared to the 220,000 per day prior to the war. So that represents a fall of around 95% in production. So this isn't sales, this is production. And this is one of the major issues that we've been discussing on the channel. The risk for Russia right now is that if they have to reduce the amount that they're producing for whatever reason, whether it be because they don't have enough operational staff, because all the ExxonMobil staff had been pulled off the project, or whether they don't have the technology, or whether they're having production problems they can't fix, any glitches in the system, there's a variety of things that can happen on site that will cause a reduction in production. And the problem you have when you have oil facilities set up to produce 220,000 barrels per day, if you're only bringing up 10,000 barrels, then you're creating major problems under the ground. And there is a real possibility here that Russia will have major issues going forward because they've essentially jammed up all of this production. So it'll be really interesting to see, firstly, whether or not Russia can get the production levels back up to where they were prior to the war. And secondly, whether or not they've got the expertise and technical capability to be able to sort out issues on site now that ExxonMobil have left. As I recently reported, the OPEC Plus nations, which is a consortium of countries that produce oil, who all look to monitor the amount that they're producing to maintain an acceptable price in the market, announced a cut of production of 2%, which equated to roughly 2 million barrels per day as a result of potential falls in demand caused by a weakening in the global economy. Now, President Biden and the USA have opposed this cut because they want to see the price of oil coming down. Firstly, because prices are currently too high. The reason that prices are coming down is because there has been a reduction in global demand driven by a slowdown. And if you keep prices artificially high, then that's going to accelerate that slowdown because we've already got high levels of inflation across the world and oil is one of the drivers for those high prices. And the second reason that the USA wants prices to come down is because high oil prices are beneficial to Russia. Russia is one of the world's biggest exporters, and even though sanctions are in place against Russia, they don't apply to the sale of oil right now. And in direct response to OPEC's decision to cut global production, the USA has now announced a further sale of oil from its Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The USA has sold just over 10 million barrels from the 180 million that it announced in September it would be releasing to the global markets. Now, I've discussed the USA's Strategic Petroleum Reserve previously, but just in case you didn't see that video, the SPR is the world's largest supply of emergency crude oil that was established primarily to reduce the impact of disruptions in supply of oil products. The oil stocks are owned by the US federal government and are stored in huge underground salt caverns at four sites along the coastline of the Gulf of Mexico. The four sites are located in Bayou Choctaw and West Hackberry in Louisiana, and Big Hill and Bryan Mound in Texas, and have a combined maximum storage capacity of 714 million barrels of oil. Now, prior to the start of the Ukraine war, the SPR had only been used on a small number of occasions. But since May this year, 165 million barrels of oil have been released and sold into the market. And this table shows the drawdowns from the SPR that have been taking place every month since May, which range between 20 and 30 million barrels per month. Stock levels in the SPR are currently sitting at around 416 million barrels, and it will be interesting to see how much the USA releases into the market, because in order to offset the reduction of 2 million barrels of oil per day announced by OPEC+, the USA would have to increase its releases to around 60 million barrels per month. And if the USA did decide to do that, then the current reserves would last for around 7 months. However, that assumes that OPEC Plus don't take any action in retaliation. Obviously, if they see that the USA is filling the gap that they've left in the market, then OPEC Plus would have the opportunity to actually pull back production even further, which is a really interesting dynamic, because what we've got here is a global market for oil. And as with all markets, the price is determined by demand and supply. However, the supply of oil is being manipulated by OPEC Plus on one side, who's reducing the supply, and the USA on the other side, which is increasing the supply. So it'll be really interesting to see how far that manipulation goes and what the two sides decide to do, whether or not they can offset each other or whether they will keep raising the bar, trying to push the other into a point where they decide not to carry on. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, there's a number of points that I wanted to pick up from today's video. The first relates to what's going on with regards to the actual conflict itself. Clearly, Russia is feeling wounded as a result of all of the pushbacks that it's had over the last few weeks, and particularly because of the incident on the Crimea Bridge. The explosion which damaged some of the bridge has really caused them to come back fighting hard, and we've now seen missile strikes in a variety of cities all over Ukraine. And that's going to have a number of economic implications. Firstly, from Ukraine's perspective, this is a reminder that the country is at war. People in the cities away from the fighting have been trying to get back to everyday life. They've been going back to work and trying to go about their daily routine. And a recommencement of bombing in some of these other cities will cause more people to leave Ukraine, and it'll cause more businesses and cities to reconsider their contingency plans. So we may well see a further reduction in output in Ukraine. We may well see lots more people leaving the country, and all of that is really bad news for the Ukrainian economy. In terms of the implication from Russia's perspective, this shows that they are committed to this conflict, and it's likely to continue for at least the rest of 2022 and possibly well into 2023. Now, that's bad news from Russia's point of view, because they're going to have to commit more people and more resources and more cash to this. So that's going to be a further drain on the economy, both from a financial and a people and productivity perspective. And therefore, it's going to cause a reduction in GDP in Russia. And in terms of the impact on the global economy, well, the uncertainty that this conflict is causing is likely to cause further price fluctuations for oil and other commodities, and is likely to accelerate the slowdown that we're already seeing. So the longer that this war goes on and the more intense the fighting becomes, the faster the slowdown in the global economy will be and the worse it will be for everybody. The formal takeover by Russia of the Sakhalin 1 oil and gas development is no real surprise. As soon as the invasion started, ExxonMobil announced that it no longer wanted to be involved in Russia, and all of their overseas operatives that were working in Russia have been removed. Now, this led to a virtual shutdown of the Sakhalin 1 facility. As I mentioned earlier, the site has gone from producing more than 220,000 barrels of oil per day to around 10,000. And restarting that facility will represent a major challenge for Russia. It's not easy to stop the flow of oil and restart it again without encountering some major issues. And this is coming at a time when Russia is losing access to technology and software that it will need to keep that plant operating. operating. So there's a really big question mark as to whether or not Sakhalin 1 will ever get back to the level of productivity that it was at previously. And added to that challenge, we're now going into the severe Russian winter. And this site is located in the Arctic Circle and operates in an environment of extremely low temperatures. And what the site needs to do now is find people to replace all of the operatives that it lost as part of Exxon's exit. So there are some really big challenges on this site facing Russia. But I think what's also been interesting is the response from Japan. Because despite the fact that they've been partaking in the sanctions and they're trying to get Russia to stop the invasion of Ukraine, they've come out and stipulated that the supply of oil and gas from Sakhalin 1 is very important to Japan. And therefore, I think it's very likely that they will do exactly the same thing as they did on Sakhalin 2, which was to confirm that they wanted to keep their investment. And in order to do that, they'll need to contact the Russian authorities and confirm that they now want to invest into the new company. So this does raise the question as to how committed Japan is to the sanctions that are being applied against Russia. Because although they are partaking in some of those sanctions, they're confirming that they still want to take oil from the Sakhalin 1 development, which obviously makes the project more viable economically because that site needs to pump as much oil and gas as it possibly can, and it needs to find buyers for those products. So having Japan located very close and confirming that it wants to take as much as it can receive will be a big positive from Russia's perspective because it means that they've got a ready-made market and they can now try to get that production up and running as quickly as possible. Now, the final issue that I wanted to pick up on today is what's going on right now with regards to the USA and OPEC Plus. So OPEC Plus recently confirmed that they want the price of oil to stay high, and their intention, therefore, is to reduce output levels. Now, the USA are less than happy with this approach. They believe that the market price of oil should settle at a lower level. This would be beneficial to the global economy because we're going into a slowdown, and lower oil prices will help everybody. It will ease the pressure on inflation and just make things more manageable. And in addition to that, a lower oil price will also mean that Russia receives less revenue, and therefore they will feel a greater effect of the sanctions. And in response to OPEC's decision to cut production, the USA has now come out and said that it will release more of its special reserves, its strategic petroleum reserves, in order to make sure that global supply is kept up and prices come down to a reasonable level. But the big question here is, what will OPEC Plus's response to that be? Because if they keep cutting their production to match the amount of oil that the USA is releasing, then on a net basis, oil prices are likely to remain high. And all that we will see is a draining of the USA oil reserves, and OPEC Plus will be sitting holding on to their reserves. Now, in reality, there is a balancing act here because as OPEC Plus cuts its production, it's also reducing its own revenue because even though the price is staying high, if you sell less volume, it's going to reduce the total gross revenue. So there will come a point where OPEC Plus don't want to keep reducing the amount they're producing because they need the income. They've got budgets. They need to produce a certain amount of oil per year. So the reality is that we're probably going to see a little bit of posturing between both sides, but the USA has shown its intention here that it doesn't want OPEC Plus to dictate what's happening in the market. It does have this special reserve and it will step in and try to increase the supply to make sure that prices don't become artificially high. But it will be fascinating to see what happens over the course of the next few weeks and months with that dynamic. So hopefully you found today's episode interesting, educational and slightly thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.